to our Community Services and Safety Committee meeting on Monday, April 11th. I am Kathy Hogarty, the council chair of this particular committee, and with me I have council member Mohamed Abdi. Is it Abdi or Abdi?
Oh, you got Abdi.
Abdi.
Yeah.
Okay. And council member Tosh Sharp, whose name is easy to pronounce. The first item on our agenda is an update on the City of Tukwila Community Leadership Initiative. And Naisha, I will say that we saw this in Equity and Social Justice. I can't remember if it's a different iteration, but all this sounded familiar that I saw in here, that I read in here.
Yep, it is, Councilmember Hogarty, and I'll keep it very brief. I'm going to share my screen with you. Give me one moment. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Well, good evening, council members and guests. My name is Naisha Fort Brooks with the Administrative Services Department. And I'm here this evening to provide you all with a high-level overview of the program, how we got here, the program and objectives, and then allow time for the council members' feedback. I just want to acknowledge real quickly that this is the Tukwila Community Leadership Initiative Committee. This is the new name of the program, the Tukwila Community Leadership Initiative, formerly known as the Community Connector Program. These amazing individuals represent the Tukwila community who have been working and co-collaborating with myself and this team to help reimagine what a new Community Connectors program can look like. So I want to provide a little bit of background specifically for Councilmember Sharp and Councilmember Abdi. The Community Connectors program was established in 2014. The pilot project identified, hired, and mentored community liaisons from the community, which was a range of seniors and young leaders from Foster High School, and then just residents in the community. The Connectors received training services like City Government 101. They acted as community liaisons to the city departments and also helped the engagement efforts for the City of Tukwila's comprehensive plan. This Community Connectors program was in partnership with two community-based organizations. The first one is Global to Local, and the other one, it was for Terra. I came on and worked with Global to Local in 2018. And this is how I got introduced to the Community Connectors program, because I, at the time, was managing the Community Connectors program in partnership with a former city staff. Her name was Mia Navarro, who was in my position at the time as a community engagement manager. So you'll see here in front of you the purpose and the mission statement that the committee members developed. They took this very seriously because they know that this is really important to the residents as well as to anyone that and the participants who will be part of the program. So you'll also see in front of you, participants are required to meet some expectations. So early, either in May or June, we will have two sessions, informational sessions. They will be hybrid. They will either be hosted at the Refugees Women's Alliance or at the library, whatever is accessible for participants to really come and learn more about the program. They must live and attend, They must live and attend a school or work in the City of Tukwila. This was a requirement when it was called the Community Connectors Program. They'll have to sign a gift card documentation and additionally attend each session to receive compensation. So right in front of you will have the program curriculum that the community committee developed. One thing that really stood out to them was basic advocacy. Oftentimes, a lot of residents who are new to this country don't understand the basic advocacy to go to the Tukwila School District or how to pay a bill. So we want to just give them the foundation, the foundational piece on advocacy. And then they'll come back again and do a deeper dive about what community advocacy looks like. They'll get a good understanding of the roles of city government and city services. One thing that really stood out to me, too, actually, was how to become an elected official and why joining the board and commission is very important when it comes to civic engagement. And then also financial literacy, which is something that's really needed in our community so that folks can be better prepared if they want to become a homeowner, if they want to start a business. So just giving them the foundational tools so that they can be successful. Here is our program budget, an annual budget of $25,000. In the past, the connectors received an $80 stipend, and the committee felt it was important because of the cost of inflation and transportation that we increased their compensation to $100. We've always provided translation, interpretation, and print material as needed. And we've always provided food, and we supported the Food Innovation Network, which now has Spice Bridge. And then if child care is needed, we provided that as well. And then if we decide if the cohort wants to bring any guest facilitators, that can help them on some additional advocacy. We've set some costs aside for that as well. That concludes my brief overview of the Tukwila Community Leadership Initiative, and they would like to thank you, and I'm going to open it up for questions. I'm going to stop sharing my screen.
All right, thank you. I'm going to start with Mohammed, Councilmember Abdi. Questions and comments?
Yes, I just want to say thank you, Naisha, for this, great presentation. I love what this program is all about because it makes me, what I can relate to in this program is I actually joined a fellowship before I ran for office, and it was like very similar to what this curriculum is about, and it helped me, one day run for, elected position, and I know how impactful this is because how much it impacted me, and I was able to make lifelong mentors, and it made me much more confident to run for office one day, so I really love what this program stands for and everything it's about. Just wanted to say that first. My quick question that I had is, I love how you mentioned, I see some familiar faces with the staff, like Ian and other people, so I want to give them their roses for all the work that they're doing. I love what this program is about. But my question is, how do you guys go about your guys' outreach as far as, you guys said you guys have about 8 to 10 participants. So has that always been something competitive, like the process? Like, do you guys do like a series of interviews and then unfortunately you have to cut some people out? Or is it usually, like, I'd love to get more information on like the hiring process, for the participants.
Sure. So in the past, it's been about 8 to 10 participants. And we never really had an interviewing process. When I was working at Global to Local at the time when we were managing the program. however, we are very grateful because we do have committee members who work for Tukwila Health Point and they work at the Connection Desk. We have Angel, who's a day one coordinator program manager for the Refugees Women's Alliance. And as they bring in new newcomers that are coming into our region, particularly SeaTac, Tukwila, they're always looking for new opportunities to put more tools in their toolbox so that they can navigate, systems and to better advocate for themselves. So we have the resources with that, including working with HIN, with Partner in Employment. We also have a partnership with the Tukwila School District. In the past, we had a couple students that participated in the program. So the outreach efforts were pretty easy, very intuitive. We made it easy for anyone to ask questions. And we do have an application form this year. We plan to get those translated into our top four languages, which is Vietnamese, Spanish, Somali, and then English, obviously. This is a new community-led approach. to the program. So we're really excited. We already have one high school student whose mother was a past participant in the Connectors program, but she was too young at the time. She is now 16 and she is able to participate in the program. So she is just waiting patiently for us to send her the information so that she can apply and participate in the program.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. Yeah. And I just love what this program is about, how it elevates leaders, like you guys said, you know, as far as the mission, you know, it did wonders for me. So I know that it'll help a lot of people. Thank you for that. The other quick question I had was, so in the curriculum, I loved everything that you guys stated in the curriculum, like with all the months and all like the target goals and everything like that. One suggestion I kind of have to, like, just as a comment, when I was like in this type of program, in the part that you mentioned, one of the months where you guys teach them how to like run for office one day, I think that a suggestion that I have is I was lacking in like more like the environmental impacts, you know, like the environmental, like, you know, side of things, like learning the, like the greens and things like that. I would say that would be something to look, maybe to look into as far as like teaching them, because being a leader, it's always good to be informed in all the different categories, like important subject matters, you know. And that was just one for me that I didn't get much awareness. So maybe that could be a suggestion. And another one maybe is like running for office. I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it, like, you know, having like management, you know, like, are you going to have a consultant or a campaign manager? You know, how do you, when, what is your mission statement going to be? Like, what's your why and everything like that? I would love, hopefully, if you guys could dive into that for the cohorts, because that's, it was very important for me to learn, you know, that I picked up. So that's just like a suggestion. And lastly, I wanted to bring up, how big has the cohort has it been? Like, is it always usually 8 to 10, or has it gotten bigger than that before?
So in the past, it's been 8 to 10. That's sustainable. In the past, it was in partnership with Global to Local. So I was managing it, and then Mia, my former predecessor, would partner with me. And then I left Global to Local, so I end up running the program for the city and Global to Local. And so we thought it was better that we brought it in-house, given that I've had that experience. But it's always more manageable when it's between 8 to 10 people, because then you build those solid, authentic relationships. I have more time, including city staff who will be coming in to do presentations. And it gives the cohort members time to get to know the elected officials, to our city staff, getting better awareness on city services, and just building those long-term relationships. So when they do leave the program, they're not overwhelmed or in competition with 20 people wanting to learn more stuff. And because of capacity issues as well and challenges, I want to make sure that I can be there and provide information for the cohort when we bring them on. So it'll be between 8 and 10. That's realistically the best for any cohort model that I've experienced as well, to have that small amount of numbers.
Yes. Thank you so much for answering that. Because, even my cohort, when I graduated from my leadership institute, was around 8 to 10. So I could see how that's, like, very effective, you know. So that's all I have to share. I just want to say thank you again, Aisha, and your staff for, you know, being a part of this. Like, this is really great in our community, because, again, I can relate to it. It elevated me to become a better leader. So I love what you guys are doing. And I know our thing today was to try to, you guys, your presentation was for us to, you know, add input, but this is almost as perfect as I could see it. So it just speaks volumes about the work that you guys are doing. So this is really great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Councilmember Sharp.
So I'm not familiar with this program. So I'm going to ask some basic questions just to get my head wrapped around it. It says in this memo that this, over the course of time, the Community Connectors program is becoming ineffective and transactional. And so it was stopped. Do we know why it was stopped? What was the primary reason?
Yeah, that's a great question, Councilmember Sharp. So I had spoke a little bit about my time at Global to Local. I was managing the Community Connectors in partnership with Mia Navarro, who left, and then the city brought me on. So it was just me and managing the program for both Global to Local and the City of Tukwila. When I was with the organization at Global to Local, I myself also experienced the tokenization of one, being a Black woman, and two, specifically, a lot of agencies would come in, take data from the community connectors, and then leave. And we never heard back with what they did with the information. And so they felt like they were being used. And I experienced that myself. And that creates disposable leaders. And it's very transactional. And that's something that we want to avoid. And so when I came on with the City of Tukwila, I shared my personal experience as a staff member with Global to Local, what myself and what the connectors were experiencing, and thought it would be better if it was community-led because they know their communities best. If we bring it in-house, it reduces the cost. Global to Local obviously was going through their own changes with staff and changes like that. So we came in, and I was able to continue to have these relationships with the former community connectors, and they envisioned them helping redevelop and reimagine what a community connectors program can look like, and hence is why there's a new name, the City of Tukwila's Community Leadership Initiative, to create leaders and not to dispose them, but to invest in them. And so that if, you know, they want to run for city council, they want to run on the school board, they want to open their own small business, they have the necessary tools because we invested in our residents and community members. Does that answer your question?
Well, I guess in a way. So just what will change, what's the change from that program to this program to make it less transactional, or, you know, to avoid what you encountered last time, what just the organizations that are involved, you tell me.
So we're no longer in partnership with the nonprofit organizations. And this program now is, rather than having the cohort be community liaisons, they go back to their community, receive information from their community, and come back to the city and share it with them. It's more so that we're giving them tools to be successful leaders in the community. If a lot of times, and a great example is when I was at Foster High School a couple months ago, the majority of the high school students, the seniors, didn't even know what a board and commission was. So if we think about recruiting folks to be on a board and commission, we need to give them the tools to know what is a board and commission, what does one do on a board and commission, and what type of tools are needed to be successful to sit on a board and commission. That would apply to wanting to start your own business. So we're basically giving them the tools to set them up for success. And that's really important for any community member to have that. I've personally been in a cohort model similar to this. And it has been very successful because you then begin to learn leadership development tools. You begin to put, it helps push you to decide if you want to pursue your education. You can put this on your resume, so it helps them get a new job, so then they can help thrive in their community that they're living in.
Okay. So then the agencies that were identified in this memo are not affiliated with this program, that's right?
They're no longer affiliated with it, but they were initially when the program started, and this is before my time, that was their idea to bring this pilot program on with the city.
So with the new program, there is no outside agency. This is all Tukwila and the folks that are on the committee that run this program. Is that a yes?
That is correct.
Okay. And then as far as referring to Councilmember Abdi, the students that can apply to this is not limited to any student, right? Any student or anyone that lives here can apply for this program and get on there. There's no limits that are presented to a student to get on this program. Is that right?
Right. So they do have an application that they have to apply to. We just want to learn the basics to see what, you know, where they're from. Are they a student? Are they a resident? They could be a senior. They can be a veteran, a retiree. There are no barriers as long as they live, work, or attend school in Tukwila, then they can apply.
Perfect. And then as far as the committee, is that, are they a volunteer group or are they compensated in some way from the city of Tukwila?
They're volunteers only.
Okay.
And few and then, from Member Sharp are former community connectors as well.
And then as far as is the school district involved? Because a lot of this stuff seems like something that you would find in a civics class. That's like, you know, Tukwila school district sort of, and this is kind of in their wheelhouse. So what's their involvement?
One of their students participates in the program, and in the past they have been. But as we know, youth tend to find their own journey and what they find interesting and if they want to participate or not. So they definitely will be notified that they can participate in this program. But again, it's only limited to 8 to 10 participants, and we want to make sure that we have a diverse group of individuals in the program. So it could be 2 students and 3 seniors and 2 veterans, as an example.
And then as far as compensation, it's $100, what, a gift card of some kind?
Correct.
What kind of gift card, like Amazon or something?
We give them an option. Oftentimes we get a Safeway card or an Amazon card, you know, whatever their preference is at that moment.
And then how many sessions is this program? How many, because it's 25,000 and I'm looking at these numbers, how many sessions are you going to have projected?
Great question. So on the program curriculum, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Look, there'll be about 9. And so in the past, not everybody comes to the monthly meeting. So if they don't show up, they don't get compensated.
And how long is the session?
They're about an hour, hour and a half long, depending on the topic.
And then you compensate so the first 8 to 10 that are part of the program, are they locked in for the entire program? Or if I'm a student, let's say I'm putting myself in there, I'm a student, I just want the $100 gift card, I show up to one of these sessions, and I tell my buddy, hey, you should go into that. How do you prevent just folks just kind of taking advantage of getting that free card?
Nope, they can't do that. The expectations is they have to show up to each session. They are a participant in that 8-month-long program. If they cannot meet that commitment and they refer their buddy is going to have to wait until the following year to apply to the program.
Okay. All right. And then as far as the budget that comes out of Tukwila City, the city of, to pay for this, is this money that's been volunteered or is it city money?
Okay. It's always coming from the city of Tukwila in the past when the program was initially developed in 2014.
And then my last thing is someone talking? Okay. My last thing is that folks that generally want to do this, the compensation sort of is an issue for me. Me personally, it's me commenting now.
Compensation
can be towards like a scholarship as opposed to giving them some sort of kind of cash thing that they can buy. My concern is why can't it be turned into a scholarship for them to be used to college? Folks who might want to know this information will just want that information. And if it's competitive, folks might sign up just to get that knowledge as opposed to being compensated. So my only issue is the compensation. Like if I'm a young person and I want to do it, I doubt I'll need the money. I would just want to know that information. So my only concern is kids just sitting through this thing just to get money and not really getting what it's intended to do as far as knowledge about how our system runs. So, but I appreciate you sharing the information with us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so thank you both. And my questions are, so tell me what the makeup is going to be of the 10 people. Like, we'll have a student on the
in the program, and who else? Like, just give an example of people of who might be in the program as well as students.
Sure. So I'm just going to refer to the past. In the Connectors program, we had a student from Foster High School, and he has now he's now at the University of Washington. One thing I just want to highlight: this individual learned how to do public speaking in front of the city council, Tukwila City Council. He's an introvert and very shy, so we're very grateful that he got to experience that. Welcome, Trish. We had a senior, and we had mothers. That's been the time of the program when I was managing it for Global to Local at that time. So anytime before that, I wasn't around. But I do know it was a diverse group of all nationalities. We did have people who were, English was a second language. So it was the whole gamut. Margaret Bratcher, former city planner, senior, was also a former community connector as well. So there was a huge diversity, and everybody learned from everyone during that time.
Thank you. I don't have any further questions because I have heard about this program. I think this is a good change. I saw the evolution of it, and I see the need for the change. So thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to this particular program and hearing back about about its successes.
Thank you, Councilmember Bugardi. I will be bringing this to the regular council meeting. So you all will be hearing this again. We just want to make sure that everyone knows about the program, and I really appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we have two more items for tonight. It's almost 6 o'clock, so I'm just going to be mindful of time, because the last item number C, was on the agenda of the meeting that we canceled. So I want to make sure we get that and make sure we've got some time for that. If we have to, we can always figure something out. We've got the school zone cameras before that, and I know it's new for our two council members, so it might be a little longer than usual. And if so, I might be starting to get kind of creative and maybe sending that to a second meeting since that is an update. So we will begin. And this is Eric, Chief. This is the Chief. I have Eric Lund for the flock, and then Chief Driever to present on this to begin the presentation. Is this correct?
So I'm clear. We're looking at flock first, or you want to?
I thought about that, but I think we can get there. I just want to, I'm just telling my fellow council members that we want to make sure we save time for that. That was what that consultation was about.
Perfect. And where this is an update, I can consolidate, especially where I'm confident. I'm not going to read from the info memo. The council has that information. But one of the things we wanted to get back to the council with regarding the school zone cameras is essentially proof of concept. The fact that we have seen month over month, especially if you refer to the info memo, the chart that shows the issued infractions month over month since we started. So in September, we provided warnings. We are at the beginning of this, we're looking at about 1,400 violations. Then we move into October, where we start actually issuing infractions for the violations, and immediately we see the violations cut in half. And then month over month, we see a reduction, and the only anomaly you see is in December, we drop down to 366 total violations, but then pop back up in January to 469, ultimately ending in February in 288 with the data that we have so far. The anomaly that you see in a drastic drop in December is because kids were out on holiday break. So just the lights were shut down. They weren't issuing infractions during that time period. So that's why you see a drop. But you see the community and public over time learning that we need to slow down in this area. And you see the direct cause of the cameras. actually doing that and reducing the number of violation and reducing the speeding that's going on in front of the school cameras. Another item of note that the council was interested in knowing is the number of Tukwila residents and community members that are being impacted by the cameras. So the number within the grid that shows the number of Tukwila addresses, that's the only way we can determine. So if the vehicle was registered to a Tukwila address, that number is inclusive of the total number. So as you look, approximately over the five-month time, you're looking at about each month, about a third of the violators are Tukwila residents. So most of the violators we're seeing are from transient vehicles that are commuting through the neighborhood. As it relates to the financial impact of the cost to run the program versus the revenue coming in from that, right now the program is sustaining itself with a slight in the positive. And one of the reasons for that is the police department itself has not determined the need to take on the extra body that was originally approved by the council. Right now, we're able to manage it with the staff on hand. We dole out the responsibilities. However, if we were to increase the number of cameras, we would probably then have to take into consideration adding that full-time employee, which by then the program itself certainly covers that, and there'd be funds in reserve as well. So one of the things also is this doesn't take into consideration that there's just shy of $200,000 of outstanding fines that haven't been addressed as well. All of this takes into consideration some of the deferral that's been going on post issuance of the violation as they work with the court. And I would defer to them as it relates to any information regarding that. However, the bottom line is the program supports itself and is performing the function, which was the intent, which was it is reducing the number of speeders in front of the school.
Thank you. Okay, so questions. I do want to make a comment first. If you look at the packet, if you have it on page 16, under program sustainability, you got an email today from Laurel that said that the estimated positive revenue from the program is $98,533, and that, per the council, is going to be allocated to be reinvested into safety training and also street improvements within the school zone area. So I just wanted to throw that in. And we have Judge Walden with us and Trish Kinlow with us, and they can answer your questions on the court side of things if you have any questions, as well as having the police department here. And we will start with Council Member Sharp.
Hello, Chief. Appreciate the presentation there. As far as out the door, if I'm reading the document right, the city sees $98,533 from this. After all, everything's paid off, and that's what the city clears. Is that how I'm reading it right then?
Yes. Keeping in mind, we're extrapolating out for the rest of the year. That number could fluctuate both positive or negative by a little bit, but that we feel that's a reasonable estimate. That estimate was based upon 9 months of the cameras being up and running, because obviously during the summertime when there's no school, we wouldn't be running the cameras, as well as during breaks that they have. We estimate that to be about 3 months deficit.
And then as far as, let's say that the workload went up and you were to have to field another individual to process this, 98 from 143 would cost the city about $40,000 to maintain the program as it sits today.
Correct. If we were to add another set of cameras, though, you could approximate the roughly the same amount of revenue, and it's already covering the cost of the court side and the police at that point. So therefore, revenue goes above that $98,000.
What's the cut as far as the city gets from these cameras? I'm sure these cameras are maintained by a third party somewhere, and so they get a percentage. What's that percentage that the city gets from these cameras?
Well, the fees from Nova Global is the fixed $71,982, roughly $6,000 a month for the two cameras. So adding more cameras, it would be the exact same cost. Any revenue over and above those numbers goes directly to the city, not counting all the expenditures that we have for the city to maintain the program, which are already addressed. So for Nova Global, which is the company that we are contracted with, it's roughly $3,000 a camera per month. It's a fixed number.
Okay, so they don't get a percentage of, like, if these cameras are more effective, they don't get more money. They get whatever it costs to have the camera. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Abdi.
thank you so much for the presentation, Chief Zier. My quick question that I have was, you guys talked about, I hear the additional consideration that you guys are discussing adding another pair of camera in the school zone. So I would love to know, like, what is the decision making behind that? Because if I were to put my comment, I say the more cameras, the better, you know? And, you know, I could see how we would want that camera there, but can you let me know where we're at with the decision making process with adding that additional camera?
So the decision making towards making a request started when we were looking at installing cameras to begin with. However, out of concern for some of the potential impacts of cameras, the council decided to move forward with only a single set of cameras. The two cameras that are there cover both east and westbound traffic there on 144th. However, there was also data that showed that there's just as much, if not more, traffic on 42nd in front of the high school as well. Now that we've shown proof of concept, we want to entertain discussion of adding more safety to the area by putting cameras on 42nd as well in front of the school zone. And if we were to do that, the revenue for that would cover the remaining cost that we would have to bump the and find the full-time employee for the police department to then start covering the added workload for that. However, it's already built in with what we have already accounted for. So the cost to the city is minimal to add that body versus the revenue that it's generating for its programs. But again, the whole point is to provide that additional safety in that particular area. And our biggest concern is we have a lot of students that cross 42nd to get to the school. So we want to slow down the speeding there as well.
So what hinders us from adding that additional camera then, if we have the revenue and everything?
If this is something the council wants, then this is something we can make happen. We would put together a formal proposal to you and push it through the formal, proposal process.
Thank you. Thanks for that. That's all I have. Thank you so much, Chief Giver.
Well, thank you for those questions. Those were ones I was going to ask. And so we have data now on this program. Before, there was some talk about adding the cameras a little earlier, but we wanted some more information. We have that information now. So my question for the chief is, in order to move forward, I want to be a little bit more specific about that. What do you need from this? Do you need anything from this committee to go along with your additional consideration, or do you just move ahead? Do you need something from us?
Well, I guess the question is more, what do you need from me? Where there has been open discussion for both for and against the idea of additional cameras, and not just from council, but from community, that's why we wanted to open the discussions about it before we made a formal request and make sure that this is something that the council wants us to consider. Now that we've provided the information that shows proof of concept of reducing the violations in the area because of the cameras, we think now would be a good time to put a proposal forward. And so I would come back with a formal proposal so that the council can then move forward to the council of a whole to a full council in order for them to make a decision as to where to move forward. So we would prepare something and have it back to the a future CSS to then make a formal request to approve it.
Is this something, Councilmember Tosh?
So my question would be, now that we had some information regarding cameras being installed near parks, right, there's some parks issue. Particularly, I'm thinking of Allentown. So is it possible for you to identify locations that these cameras can go other than the high school, perhaps Thorndike, Cascade, Tukwila Community Center, and then you would present that as like possibilities. So instead of being focused in on just one location, giving the council options, saying, look, perhaps you may not want it there, or our studies show that putting one at Cascade is not going to yield the results you want, even though it would increase safety. But here are some other locations that we have identified throughout the city that it may be appropriate that fits that criteria of being near parks. Is that a possibility?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I would think that if you did that, it would be a little more, it would bait the appetite for proceeding. So it's just a thought.
Yes. And that, so we, originally the cameras spent a lot of time in committee. That's why staff was really intentional about bringing this back to this committee right now. And I personally put it all through the paces. Everyone remembers that. I had like literally a page full of questions and things in order to make sure that we were, you know, that this was really going to work. Questions were answered to my and other council members' satisfaction. And so we're here. We started out with a different proposal for a different area for the cameras. But Councilmember Sharp, I'm thinking, just because this is such a huge issue, I would suggest compartmentalizing these two cameras on 42nd and then making the looking at Allentown another issue, because the need is there and pretty established. That can go forward a lot more quickly than Allentown will. And so, yes, talking about both of them, but not saying you'd implement them at the same time, just because of one can happen more quickly than the other. And I would be interested in input from, I'll say, Trish, do you have input on that? Let's get your expertise. She's here in the room.
Well, the legislation is a little different as it relates to the cameras around the park situation, so I do agree with you, council member, that that's something that probably shouldn't be joined in with the additional cameras that the chief is currently talking about, because there needs to be a clear understanding about that. But I do agree with council member Sharp that it is something that the city should consider. But it is going to require a little more detail about the regarding the legislation and RCW regarding those types of cameras. They're not the same as
right.
The schools
they have,
are.
Right, and the funding is different. So I would be willing as a committee to recommend that we advance forward both of those, but in separately. Because the issues are a little different, but to recommend what you suggested, Allentown as well, to throw that in and suggest that. If you are, are you with that?
Yes.
So our recommendation, you guys tell me if this is wrong, is to move forward with the cameras on 42nd in whatever your next step is for that, and also now to be considering some sort of outreach or however your step one is for cameras in the park zones as per the legislation that was tacked on to the end of the transportation package, that legislation. That'll probably is a question for your workload as well for that camera issue. But you can come back to us and tell us what you think about Allentown.
I concur hearing the other concerns regarding a merger of the two. I agree that that's the best way to approach it. We will come back with proper recommendations for both.
Is that good?
Yes.
We got it?
Just, you are an expert in traffic in some fashion, so if there are other locations other than the two we identified, feel free to mention those, because we're not everywhere in the city, and there could be this need near another park or Cascade View Elementary, you get what I mean. It doesn't have to be just those two locations. It could be wherever you think it's appropriate and the city gets the most value.
I'll work with the other city departments for us to come up with recommendations that would take the entire city into consideration for where it can best be utilized.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so we are to item number letter C, the update on the automated license plate reader for Flock Safety. And it's an update. Was this in committee last year? Since I wasn't on the committee. So this is new information. Is that true?
Yeah, this is
so new. Take it away, Deputy Chief.
Sure thing. Deputy Chief Eric Lund. We're talking about cameras, but these are totally different than what we just finished talking about. And I'll get into that. So, the bad news first, and you guys see in the memo, crime's up. And you don't have to read my memo to know that. You can see it in the news. Even our stats in Tukwila, they're pretty staggering. Burglaries are up 24% from 2020 to 2019. Auto thefts increased 15% in 21 compared to 20, which Trina Cook, our crime analyst, says these are totals we haven't seen since 2006. So pretty high. And in fact, this is not just a Tukwila thing. This is a regional thing. And I just got a call from the mechanic down in Auburn. Somebody tried to steal my truck out of the shop today. So I'm dealing with it personally. But one of the things we've come up with as a possible solution is ALPRs, which is automated license plate readers. So what these are, they are not video cameras. They're not for surveillance. They simply just take pictures of cars when they drive by a location. And in the packet I sent you, there was a flyer from the company that shows kind of the product image. Kind of a sample of a picture they take. They take a picture of the rear of the car and the license plate. Basically, the way I describe this to people is when a crime happens, we look back for breadcrumbs on every crime. And what this does is it helps us find these breadcrumbs. Most people that commit crimes drive vehicles. And to be able to have a lead will allow us to do an investigation. So currently right now with, our staffing levels, our major crimes unit doesn't really look into any crimes where there's no leads, and that's a lot of our cases. We just don't have the resources or the manpower to be able to do that. So what this does is it gives us a picture of a suspect vehicle. A lot of times when people call 911, they say, I don't have a license plate, but I saw a red truck drive away from my neighbor's house after they broke into it. The great thing about this system is we can go backwards and search just red truck and give a time frame, and it'll give us pictures of all red trucks that have passed by certain cameras. And one thing I want to point out is that we have to have a reason to go back and look. We can't just start looking at cars or looking at cameras. Every time we do a search, we have to put in a case number, so there's that audit trail. It keeps us very transparent about what we're looking for. So for what this does, it's, talking to detectives, the last few murders that we've investigated, we would have had leads within 10 minutes of the call coming out. We would have had a license plate and a vehicle. The one at the mall recently, we had a very fuzzy picture of a vehicle, didn't have a license plate. I mean, imagine what we could have done if we had a license plate within 10 minutes. We could have, had a really solid lead and doing some more investigation and trying to hold people accountable. So anyway, some more technical stuff. The data is only stored for 30 days. And then what we can also do is we can upload these pictures directly into evidence.com, which is what we use for digital evidence. So it works well together with some of the programs that we already have. We're going to enter into a 60-day trial period. So we have 26 locations in the city that we have mapped out. We're almost complete doing that. We've been kind of figuring out, a lot of them work on solar. Well, majority of them do, but there's, we live in Washington, so sun can sometimes be an issue. So there's certain locations where we're going to try to tie into existing power at, existing poles. Flock does all the installation. They do all the maintenance. So there's no added work to other city departments. And after 60 days, we'll come back to you with stats and try to go into a full agreement. And so money-wise, the cameras are $2,500 per camera, so it'll be the first year will be about $75,000. We can absorb that into our budget, and the recurring cost is about $68,500 a year, and we were going to be asking for that to be in the budget. We'll be asking for that in the next budget process. So that's about all I have. If you guys have any questions, also, if you have any technical questions, I do have a rep from the company on the line. So anything that's super technical, ask away, and Matt will be willing to answer those questions. Is everything all right?
Yeah, we just had somebody talking in the background.
Okay.
And so we wanted, and so we were shutting the door so we could hear better.
Got it. The way you were looking, I thought something was going on in the parking lot. I wanted to make sure that everything was all right. So.
Oh, I just was like, I want to be able to hear. So that's what that look was. That's all the look was. So Councilmember Abdi, questions, comments?
Yes. Thank you, Deputy Chief, for the presentation. Appreciate it. My first quick question I had was, when was this built? I'm relatively new to this type of technology and everything like that, so love to know like the context. When was this first established?
I can give you a guess, but I can let Mac answer that if you guys don't mind, if he can just answer some technical questions for you.
Thanks, everyone, for allowing me to join here. So Flock, as an organization, we started in 2016.
Oh, thank you, Matt. I appreciate you. Nice to see you as well. Thank you so much. This is good for my context and those that, you know, would like to know. My other quick question was, so I understand that you guys are trying to have a recommendation to have us, like, approve the contract for the trial period. My question is, if you guys, let's say hypothetically, everything goes to plan, everything works well, you guys get this contract, where would you guys want to place these things? Have you guys gotten that far yet?
Yes, we definitely. We've been working on a deployment plan, and Mac actually has a map. If you guys could allow him to share his screen, I'm not sure if he needs to be made a presenter or not, but we can show you a map.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Oh, David just stepped out of the room, so he might not be able to do it. We can do it when he comes back.
Okay.
Oh, you know how? Oh, wait. Trish might know how to do this. Saves the day. Did you have other questions while she is?
Yeah, as she's doing that. Yeah, so. With you guys, like, when did you guys get aware about this technology, and who referred it to you guys to take on this?
There was some marketing that came through, and I thought it was very interesting, so I reached out to the company, and they gave us a presentation back in the winter before the new year. And ironically, Officer Collier, he's a new lateral officer that we just hired from Georgia, and Flock is very big in the Southeast, and they had it in his department, and he was raving about the you know, what you can do with them. You know, one thing that I didn't mention is the cameras connect to the database of stolen cars. Since we have a huge auto theft problem in our region, what will happen is the officer will get an alert in real time on their car computer. When a stolen car drives by a camera, it'll say, stolen car just drove by this location, and the officers can respond to it right away. We just recovered a stolen van that was parked in a residential neighborhood that was used in a burglary in SeaTac this morning. We could have recovered that a lot sooner, or possibly caught the person when they were driving by, you know. So to be able to get to the location right away is pretty important when you're trying to recover stolen cars and get property back to the rightful owners.
And if I could add also real quickly, you know, a part of the problem with the rise in criminal activity is not being able to catch the criminals. If we are able to catch them and put them in jail or other diversion programs and put them in programs so that they are not out there committing crimes, this is an incredible way for us to be able to drop crime rate for the city.
Thank you, Chief, and Deputy Chief. I also agree, just from the readings and looking into this, I do think that this is something very effective and something that could really help our city greatly, because we want to reduce, you know, the auto theft and the criminal activities. My last quick question I had was, you mentioned the person that referred to you about this technology. Do you ever recall, like, the percentage, like, how much it affected, like, greatly affected their community or their city? Like, was there, like, a large difference in, like, the data, like, from what they were experiencing to when they got the technology? Did you guys ever get that type of intel?
Yeah, so there's some stats provided by Flock that they've collected, and it says communities with ALPR systems that report, or they have reported crime reductions of up to 70%. That's a very huge number. But, you know, it included a 60% reduction in non-residential burglaries, so commercial burglaries, and an 80% reduction in residential burglary, and a 40% reduction in robberies. So I don't have the hard data, but that's the information that was provided to me. And I have no doubt that we'll see a reduction. And that's the good thing about this plan, is we can come to you in 60 days and say, we did all this stuff with the help of Flock. And I actually have been keeping a tally of cases in Tukwila where we could have used Flock, what we could have accomplished if we had Flock. You know, our last two shootings, you know, there was a shooting that's been talked about in the Cascade View neighborhood. We had a make and model of a car, didn't have a license plate. We could have had a license plate right away. So looks like Matt can share his screen now. So does that answer your question, council member?
Yes, yes, I do. Okay. Yes, I do. Thank you. Yeah. Is he sharing the screen right now, or should we just?
I think so.
It still shows that only meeting organizers and presenters can share. It's still showing up as gray to me. If it shows up for you, Deputy Chief Lund, I think you have that same link. Yeah. I have as well. So if you can throw it up there, we should be good.
Will do.
Okay.
Can you guys see this here?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. You zoom in. First, we'll start around South Center. So as you can see, each one of these, and we had our crime analyst and public works together, kind of figure out our deployment plan here. So a lot around the mall. Here's coming on Strander Boulevard on both the east and west side of the mall. Minkler Boulevard, 180th, 184th South Center Parkway, so going up the hill by the new fire station. So around the central business district, there's quite a few. And then we have 144th and McAdam Road. International Boulevard are the rest of them. So some of the areas we kind of targeted were areas where we have more calls for service. But that's kind of the initial plan right now.
Thank you, Chief Deputy. This is my most important question. And I love that you guys have already looked into areas that you guys would love to place them. My last quick question is, where would you say that upon data is we get the most criminal activity? Like, what specific area in Tukwila?
If you're asking about calls for service, it's definitely around South Center Mall, right? And that's just because of the sheer number of people that are down there. Right now, shoplifters are big. Catalytic converter thefts are huge. Auto thefts are huge. And, you know, along Tukwila National Boulevard, I mean, you guys have all been made aware of a lot of the violent crime that's been happening up here. So that's kind of the main reason, is high crime, violent crime areas up along Pacific Highway or Tukwila National Boulevard, and then around the mall, where I think we can make the most impact.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Those are all my questions. Thank you, Mac, for sharing, and Deputy Chief. And I do support this.
Thank you. Councilmember Sharp.
So is there any other cities in the area that actually use this system? I mean, like in the Pacific Northwest, Puget Sound area.
I'll let Mac start with that, but then I want to let you guys know what we've kind of started here. So actually, you can answer that too, Mac.
Yep. So to answer your question directly, no, there is no one, no other law enforcement agencies using this technology directly in Puget Sound. I will put one caveat there. We currently have about 17 privately funded cameras. something that I think Deputy Chief mentioned just briefly is that we actually started just selling these cameras into neighborhoods. And so there's already 17 different neighborhoods in Puget Sound, and Clyde Hill Police Department has been given access to three of the cameras that are currently placed in Yarrow Point. And one of those cameras was actually just added about a month ago. They had two, they were seeing success, so they wanted to add a third. And so to, I think, steal DC's thunder here, we're having conversations with Kent Police Department right now, Des Moines Police Department, Algona, Pacific, Bonnie Lake, Lake Forest Park are all very interested, have all, you know, given me expressed interest in wanting to go through this. We've done similar deployments with all of them. And something that's great about this trial offer is that even during that first 60 days, you guys are going to be able to network your cameras with all of those other agencies' cameras. We know that a criminal in Tukwila is likely headed somewhere else in King County. And if they can show up in, you know, Pacific an hour later with a vehicle description or a license plate that matches up something that's going on in Tukwila, we've seen regionally, with Flock being based out of Atlanta, kind of growing southeast to northwest, that this thing really catches on like wildfire. Yakima Police Department just installed their first cameras last week. Their gang sergeant has been calling me left and right with the stolens that they've been able to recover. Spokane County Sheriff's Office, Airway Heights, Liberty Lake have all added cameras as well. And so, you know, here in the next couple of months, we're hoping to have 150 plus cameras throughout Washington State.
Is there another provider of this kind of service, or are you the exclusive one that offers this plate reader thing?
Well, one thing, Councilmember Sharp, is, and I'll let Mac answer that, but Axon is what we use for our body cameras and our car cameras. It's the company we use. And Fleet 3 is the next generation of car cameras that we'll be installing into our next cars that come online. And they have ALPR technology built into them. So I will let Mac answer your question directly, but there are other ALPRs, but not what they provide. It's something different because the data, I can search the data. If Kent and Renton and Federal Way and Des Moines all get on the system, we have access to each other's data. So I can go back and look and see if a car was in Des Moines during one of their crimes, or you know what I mean? So that's the huge part for me. But Mac, you can go ahead and answer that.
Yeah, it's a great question, because license plate readers have been around for almost 40 years now. And traditionally, they are infrared images that get gathered off of something that is shiny, so like a metal plate. What we've done is taken that traditional model and turned it into a machine learning model that is a little bit more intuitive in terms of, like DC said, catching vehicle descriptions. Hey, we saw it was a red truck with a bumper sticker and a top rack on it. You can go into our system and search that. That type of capability is unique to Flock Safety. Also, our subscription model. So these cameras have been traditionally anywhere between 10,000 to 40,000 each. And what we've done is kind of taken Netflix and the success that they've had with a subscription model and say, hey, we're going to give you access to these cameras. Like Deputy Chief said, $2,500 per camera per year. If they ever go out, if they ever, you know, have an issue, you guys aren't left with hardware that is obsolete. We'll come in and replace and manage those items and do all the hardware replacement for you. So you don't end up with a storage room full of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. The other thing that's unique about our software is just the accuracy. We've done head-to-head, you know, studies with our competitors, and we've come up about 30% more accurate than them. And so when you combine all those things together, something that is infrastructure-free, something that is cost-efficient, something that's easy to manage, and something that produces results, you know, that is what is unique about Flock.
Well, that's good. I mean, I have to be honest, in my gut, because we're at point blank range here at Tukwila, there's a lot of crime. It's a problem. So my gut says, yeah, man, this seems like a good idea. My only comment is that we're all in the affirmative. So there are things that, Chief Lund, you're sitting in your seat, you may not be able to see all of the ramifications on how this impacts the citizenry, right? There might be things that we didn't consider as far as infringing on people's personal liberties and rights. I mean, we have a judge sitting in here, so that's sort of her purview. But what I'm saying is, my comment is, I would like to see someone who would perhaps be an expert on why this may not be entirely something we should do. I'm not saying I'm against it. It's just we're all in the same room, and we're sort of all cheerleading kind of for it. But I just want to make sure that there's another voice that could perhaps present the cons or some things that we need to consider. And as far as the cameras, I would hope you post some of those cameras on Military Road, because if once these folks understand where these cameras are, they're just going to take that exit off, because I live in Cascade View. That's just, Chief, you know where I kind of live. So, but that's another thing. That's my only comment.
So I can address that also for sure.
Oh, and also one other thing is, with all this additional data, you may need additional personnel. I mean, we already had the two camera thing. Will you need more people in order to process this data, or can you use this program as is? Like, if it was fully installed, would you need more FTEs to support this?
So we wouldn't need any more FTEs. This is just data that's collected. It's saved for 30 days, and it's deleted forever. It's like we're going back and looking for evidence. So it doesn't require any additional work, if that makes any sense. So we're not processing tickets or anything. It's just a photograph. All the work comes after that. Once you have a license plate, now I go out and I can be a detective. Now I can go out and try to find a bad guy. As far as, and I totally hear your concerns, council member, about people's personal privacy. Just so you know, and I didn't touch on it, there's nothing that these cameras collect that is any personal identifiable information. It's a picture of your car and the license plate. It doesn't run the license plate and give me anybody's name. Now, I have access to that with my, because I'm a police officer, I can run a license plate. But I'm just getting a picture of a car and a license plate, and that's it, and the location and the time. So we're not doing surveillance. We can't just randomly search. I don't even know what kind of car you drive, sir, but I can't go and search for Councilmember Sharp's car and see where he was at in the Tukwila. It would have to be something, if a vehicle was involved in a crime, I could go backwards and look for the breadcrumbs, like I was saying.
Thank you, Chief.
Okay, we have a couple minutes left, and I do have some comments that I would like to make and a conclusion. But I do see Judge Walden on the screen, and I think perhaps you're up because you'd like to make a few remarks or comments. This is true, and you're welcome to.
Well, I just was available to answer any questions, if there were any questions about how we were processing camera tickets. I think we've, overall, if I may share, I think we've gotten great feedback from the community. I spent a lot of time during hearings explaining to them the purpose of the cameras isn't to hurt them financially, but to act as a reminder that they should be slowing down in the school zones. Yes, a lot of those tickets get reduced significantly because, unfortunately, a lot of times we have people who make very little money who are getting those tickets. I would offer that many times you see grandparents taking kids to school, and they're living with their children, adult children, and they're taking their kids to school, and they're on a fixed income. So a lot of times you'll see a significant reduction in the fines because people don't have an ability to pay. However, overall, I have not experienced the sort of the aggression that other courts have experienced, because I think our team takes the time to explain to people the purpose of the cameras and how they can have an opportunity to come to the court to ask for a reduction in their penalties if they do not have an ability to pay. So for the most part, people are given an opportunity to be heard. People are paying their tickets. Once a person does not pay their tickets, they haven't responded. I know there's a great deal of those. We do send pre-collection notices to those folks so that they know that they've been identified as someone that may be sent to collections if they have not paid. Ultimately, the majority of those people do respond and ask for reconsideration and ask for a reduction. So people are being held accountable. Fines are being reduced pretty significantly for people who can't afford them, because unfortunately, that's the vast majority of the people who are getting these tickets. You'll also see a significant number of them being dismissed because the law requires that if a person who was driving the vehicle was not the registered owner of the vehicle, that the ticket is dismissed. The ticket is issued to the registered owner of the vehicle, and the tickets are assigned to the vehicle and not to the driver. So, for instance, if, and this happens quite frequently at the high school, where the vehicles are registered to their parents, their adult parents, and teens are speeding to the high school, if their parents come to a hearing and sign an affidavit saying that they were not the person who was driving the vehicle, the law requires me to dismiss that ticket. So if you see a significant number of dismissals, 99% of the time it's because the person has submitted an affidavit that they were not the driver of the vehicle. So that's the sort of the downside. I mean, I think every now and then an officer on the scene is good to remind kids they need to slow down, because I would imagine most of the high school kids who are speeding to school are not the registered owner of the vehicle. So nobody's really truly being held accountable for those speeding tickets. But other than that, I think the program is working really well. Again, a positive feedback from the community. I did see that Chief Lund did point out that the only thing I can see with the FLOC program would be more search warrants, but that's a good thing. So, and we're readily available to process those search warrants. And I'm available to answer any questions if anybody has any questions for me.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So we just have a few minutes left, and I did want to talk about the section on accountability and safeguards. So I speak in support of the 60-day trial. And then after the 60 days, probably it would be good to do some sort of process like what Councilmember Sharp was talking about, and see if there's, you know, their objections or what those are. And then also to look through these accountability and safeguards and make sure they're pretty watertight, that they do the job of protecting people. And so those are my few comments. Now, it doesn't say that you have to have our approval in order to do this 60-day trial period. However, it would be nice for us to let the police department know what we think, and I'm in support of it.
I support it.
Okay, so you have three council members supporting the trial period.
Yeah, okay. we wouldn't have signed our names on the line if you guys wouldn't have approved, so... we're close. The attorneys are talking, trying to get the contract squared away, and we're really close. So this is perfect timing.
All right, thank you, and thank you, fellow council members. Well, we have 15 or 17 minutes before our next meeting, and thank you, staff, for being here, and we appreciate it. And this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.